adversarial stance against China, and China's responding in kind. That means that businesses are put in a very awkward position.
We will explore the intensifying trade war between the United States and China. This is Friday, June 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Remember, you're a part of this program. Join us, if you will, on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, we'll hear more from our reporter in Hong Kong for an update on the protests there, and we'll explore the problem with plastics. It is all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump's push to confront China's trade practices has garnered bipartisan congressional support, unlike any other major initiative his administration has tackled. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman reports that while lawmakers of both political parties praised Trump for initiating a get-tough approach to Beijing, the specifics of his China policy have sparked doubts and some resistance on Capitol Hill.
The President of the United States.
China has been on President Trump's mind from his first address to Congress.
And we've lost 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization.
To his most recent political rallies.
So I just announced it will increase tariffs on China. And we won't back down until China stops cheating our workers and stealing our jobs.
Previous administrations decried Chinese trade practices, from currency manipulation to flooding the market with low-cost steel. Trump is the first U.S. leader to forcefully strike back, earning bipartisan applause from Congress.
We won't stand for our ideas and technologies being stolen, and we won't stand for our people losing their jobs to unfair competition.
We gotta do something about China, or America will not be a strong economic power 10 or 15 years from now.
Now, I know it may surprise some of my colleagues, but I agree with President Trump when it comes to recognizing the scope of challenge that China presents to the United States.
The president has been an economic nationalist from the start.
You lost your jobs, we lost revenue. And nobody even apologized except me.
Trump's populist rhetoric sometimes sounds similar to that of his fiercest Democratic critics.
If they can make a nickel by sending your jobs somewhere else, they'll do it. Well, I'll tell you this. Those giant corporations, they may not care about American workers, but I do, and I'm willing to fight for them.
Some Republicans credit Trump with forcing their party to grapple with the challenges China presents.
Frankly, too many of my members of my own party have been China doves for too long, focused primarily on the business relationship that we have with China. I think that's changed a lot over the last 3 years.
Even so, imposing tariffs and inviting a trade war have alarmed many Republicans.
1 in 5 jobs in Iowa is tied directly to trade.
Erecting new market barriers with tariffs and quotas cannot be a long-term solution.
Democrats, meanwhile, say Trump has squandered leverage on China by picking trade fights with U.S. allies.
All the tariff fights with Canada, Mexico, Europe, Japan make no sense. We ought to all be united and aimed at China, and I think we'd come to a very good solution quickly.
Republicans want a U.S.-China trade deal as soon as possible.
Ultimately, nobody wins a trade war unless there is an agreement at the end, after which tariffs go away. Hopefully, these tactics will lead us to that day.
Democrats fear a deal that falls short.
The president has made it a practice to get up in front of the television cameras, tout new trade deals, reap splashy headlines, but those announcements have been consistently hollow and the results underwhelming.
Because we're going to make America wealthy again.
Trump remains committed to a trade strategy that relies on tariffs, recently calling them a great negotiating tool and revenue producer.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
What does the continuing U.S.-China trade war mean for international companies, along with the financial shape of the entire world? That's coming up here on VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. A suicide blast has killed at least 9 people and wounded 13 at a police checkpoint in eastern Afghanistan. India announcing plans to launch its own space station. The chairman of the Indian Space Agency telling reporters Thursday that India is targeting that launch for 2030. The UN World Health Organization says hundreds of HIV-positive children in Pakistan cannot get treatment because there aren't enough antiretroviral drugs in the country. China's envoy to Geneva said Thursday that he hoped UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet would visit China, including Xinjiang. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. China is putting pressure on some major international businesses based in the United States to not obey Washington's imposed ban on the sale of technology to at least one Chinese tech company, Huawei, or face what China calls dire consequences. Published reports say China is threatening to label such companies as hostile and placed on an unreliable entity list. Joining us via Skype on VOA Asia is economist Philip Levy, former senior economist on trade for former U.S. President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. Also, he's a senior fellow at the Chicago Council of Global Affairs. Phil, what's led to this situation?
The Trump administration has taken an adversarial stance against China, and China's responding in kind. That means that businesses are put in a very awkward position where they're sometimes being asked to choose whose side are you on.
How is this being implemented? In other words, these companies like Dell, like Microsoft, too, that are cited in quite a few reports, have been ordered not to sell certain technology to Huawei. They're just caught between a rock and a hard place, are they not?
They are caught between a rock and a hard place. I think the exact terms by which this is going to be implemented are still under discussion. You've even had discussions within the administration about what's the right timing for this and how should this be done. I think that may be part of why the Chinese are staking their claim right now, is to show there will be consequences if this is done in an aggressive fashion.
The Chinese government came out today, being Thursday, saying that this whole situation could lead to a recession. Do you agree with that?
I think China's not alone in warning of that. I think you've had the International Monetary Fund saying repeatedly that these trade tensions pose a serious threat to the global economy. Whether it's a push all the way into recession or not is an open question, but it seriously can do harm.
How long can the current situation be maintained as far as the possibility of a recession, be it worldwide, be it in China, be it in the United States, take place?
What we can look at are the big trends. And the big trends are that you had slowing global economies to start with. You had problems in China with things like debt. Europe was growing slowly. They're dealing with Brexit issues and Italy issues. And now you have all of these trade tensions and tariffs layered on top of that. At some point, those can add up and have a serious effect.
Let me shift over, if I can, to the protest in Hong Kong. We carried a story yesterday where we had some lawmakers on Capitol Hill saying that they are ready to amend a program that they have had in the past that would maybe question Hong Kong's ability, because of these demonstrations, to be classified differently than they have been, less lenient.
I think the U.S. has to be very careful here to make sure that the tactics we adopt work well with our strategy, that it can be tempting to sort of lash out and threaten. The real question is that going to be more or less effective in supporting the cause of democracy in Hong Kong? There is a serious danger of this backfiring.
How do you see that backfire?
There's a suspicion of the U.S. This is occurring in a climate of heightened antagonism between China and the U.S., and that's not a narrative that's going to work well for the protesters of Hong Kong.
So what do you think has to happen here? Should the Hong Kong government go through with this very controversial measure of being able to extradite anybody charged with anything to mainland China?
I'm not in favor of the measure. I think that it undermines the sort of autonomy that Hong Kong was supposed to have. That said, if you ask me whether I think it will happen, I think it will go ahead. This is an issue where it would help if we had better relations with China at the moment. And doing this in an atmosphere of antagonism will not help the protesters.
Stay with us here on VOA Asia, where momentarily you'll hear the latest from Hong Kong. Happening now, two oil tankers came under a suspected attack Thursday near the strategic Strait of Hormuz, with one of them set ablaze. And the U.S. blamed Iran in what it called a campaign of escalating tensions in a region crucial to global energy supplies. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. A semblance of normalcy returned to Hong Kong Thursday after clashes between police and protesters who oppose a controversial extradition bill that would allow criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial. Wednesday, thousands of activists managed to shut down government headquarters and the Legislative Council on the day it was to debate the extradition bill. Officers wearing helmets and carrying shields fired tear gas, rubber bullets, and pepper spray to push back protesters. Hospital authorities say at least 72 people were injured. The demonstrations forced the legislature to postpone Wednesday's session. Hong Kong is a semi-autonomous territory of China that maintains its Western-style court system and freedom of press and assembly. Many residents, however, feel the proposed law and other changes that Beijing backs are eroding those freedoms. Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, has indicated that she will not back down on this passage of the extradition bill, which the government says is needed to bring criminals to justice. Journalist Erin Hale has been covering this story for VOA. She spoke with our Kate Pound Dawson on the day's events.
Early this morning, the protests really wrapped up for the day. There was very intense rain, and I think people were very tired. So when I got to the area around, 8 or 9 a.m., where there had been huge protests just last night, most people were gone. And there were some people who were still there cleaning up, boxes, taking supplies back. They didn't say that the protests were over, but they said they were just, going to regroup. The protests aren't officially, yesterday's weren't officially organized, but sort of an unofficial organizer, Civil Human Rights Front, has said that there will be a march on Sunday. So things will definitely continue.
Now, what is expected next from the government?
So the government, it's unclear. They've closed the legislature today, and it will be closed again tomorrow. So they're just delaying it as much as possible. Carrie Lam yesterday did speak to the people of Hong Kong through a Facebook video, and she did go on TV, and she basically chastised them for protesting, and I think continues to push the line that they don't understand what this law is. So I do not think she's going to back down. The vote is still officially set for June 20th, but it's possible that will get delayed. They have until mid-early July, when the legislature usually goes on summer recess. So they could possibly just keep pushing it back, because they have set about 66 hours for debate officially, or they did before the protest happened, and it's unclear if they're still planning to do that, because the bill hasn't passed its second reading yet, so it needs to do that to continue.
Okay. Now, what has China said about all of this?
China has said previously, I think yesterday, that this is an internal matter and has asked for foreign countries to stay out of it. Today they were very critical of some comments by the European Union that, basically said that the EU still had concerns about the extradition bill and urged Hong Kong to respect the right of protesters. In the state media, they've really emphasized the violence of the protests, and they made them sound, a lot more like riots and hoodlums. And they've also really been pushing this line that there's a protest online right now with 900,000 people signatures saying that they support the extradition bill, but it's unclear if that petition is reliable.
Reporter Erin Hale in Hong Kong speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. Coming up, the pressing problem of plastic pollution. This is VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, a cyclone in the Arabian Sea battered an Indian fishing hub with heavy wind, waves, and rain Thursday, and was forecast to bring dangerous weather even as it veered away from the western coast. The India Meteorological Department said Cyclone Vayu, the season's second major storm and named after the Hindi word for wind, had jogged west, skirting the coast of the western state of Gujarat. World Oceans Day was observed on June 8th, and the challenges facing the world's oceans are profound. Overfishing is slowly leading to the collapse of some of the world's iconic large fish. Climate change is bleaching and destroying the world's iconic reefs. But one of the most threatening and challenging issues is the millions of tons of plastic that are being poured into our oceans every year. More from VOA's Kevin Enox.
8 million metric tons of plastic find their way into the world's oceans every year. In Gabon, the beaches are littered with it. In the Drina River, which flows between Montenegro, Serbia, and Bosnia, it creates islands of floating garbage. In Australia, plastic straws litter the ocean floor offshore from Sydney, Australia. We are slowly drowning in our own waste.
We have thrown so much garbage into the sea, and it has reached coasts where there are not even people, but there is already garbage. It is very sad to see animals that have died, see nests of birds that are mixed with garbage.
Efforts to pick up all that trash are growing, but with so much going into the world's waterways, small grassroots efforts cannot hope to keep up.
We have so much plastic garbage. We believe that between 100 and 200 tons of plastic garbage is dumped daily, and that is enormous. When we have river flooding or something similar, we can see the result. Tons of garbage floating in the rivers.
In Australia, after a summer of picking straws off the ocean floor, a team of volunteers plucked over 2,000 straws out of Manly Cove. To put that in perspective, Australians use 2.9 billion straws a year. But even when local efforts to pick up all that garbage are making an impact, there's a much bigger problem. In countries that have well-established recycling programs, all that plastic waste has to go somewhere. Until recently, the Chinese were doing a booming business, dealing with an estimated 45% of the world's throwaway plastic. That is until 2018, when Beijing abruptly banned all plastic imports. And a lot of that plastic is ending up in places like Malaysia, Vietnam, and Thailand.
Before the China ban, they just sent to China for recycling, but they do not take this further step to ensure those recyclable are properly recycled. And now, after the China waste ban, they just find another new places to send their recyclable to.
And none of these countries have the recycling infrastructure in place to deal with that trash. So it ends up going back into the environment, or it is being disposed of in ways that are putting local people at risk.
They just dump the non-recyclable plastic or the reject product, and then they burn in the backyard of this factory. So those toxic fumes actually already cause a lot of health problems to our residents.
And these countries are beginning to follow China's lead and cap the amount of plastic waste they're willing to take in.
We are killing ourselves by using too many plastic. We're too dependent on plastic. Please manage and handle your own trash. Don't dump to our country.
At a recent United Nations conference in Geneva, 180 countries discussed a proposal to force plastic waste exporters to receive permission from destination countries in advance. a system known as prior informed consent. But environmental activists say the ultimate answer has nothing to do with recycling, but with moving away from our throwaway plastic culture. And fast. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
This news break from VOA Asia, Southeast Asia is battling to contain the spread of highly contagious African swine fever known as pig Ebola. It's already led to the culling of millions of pigs in China and Vietnam. African swine fever, which is harmless to humans but fatal to pigs, was discovered in China last August. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. For the first time, a Japanese Navy ship will take part in joint military exercises in Australian waters. Analysts say it's a sign of growing defense ties between the Asia-Pacific partners. Last week, the Australian government was criticized for not giving advance notice of a visit by Chinese warships to Sydney. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Every 2 years, the Australian and United States military take part in Exercise Talisman Sabre. The war games are mostly conducted across northern and eastern Australia. This year, defence forces from New Zealand, Canada and Britain will participate. For the first time, the Japanese Navy will also be involved in manoeuvres that are designed to foster greater defence cooperation and integration among the Allies. Australia and the United States have a military accord dating back to the 1950s, and increasingly, the two nations have sought greater military ties with Tokyo, a former World War II enemy. Dr. John Lee is from the United States Studies Centre in Sydney.
You're seeing far greater strategic military defence and intelligence cooperation between these three countries. You can also bet that there'll be far more public support for Japanese warships and exercises with Japanese warships compared to the situation when Chinese PLA ships appeared suddenly in Sydney.
The Australian government was criticised for not announcing in advance that three Chinese warships would be sailing into Sydney Harbour earlier this month on a pre-planned four-day stopover. Analysts say Chinese authorities would be monitoring this month's Exercise Talisman Sabre carefully. Most of the drills that run from late June to early August will take place in the Shoalwater Bay Military Training Area and surrounding forests near Rockhampton in central Queensland. The simulated battles will involve up to 25,000 military personnel operating at sea, on land and in the skies. Australian officials say the relationship with Japan is its most mature in Asia, that's underpinned by a shared commitment to democracy, human rights and the rule of law, as well as common approaches to international security. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers who have been reviewing observation data from the Kepler spacecraft have occasionally been treated to pyrotechnic displays they call superflares. These superflares are incredibly powerful bursts of high-energy radiation that are being blasted from relatively young and active stars. Scientists say superflares are hundreds to thousands of times more powerful than the largest recorded flares from our own sun. A team of astronomers say they have found evidence that suggests stars as old as our 4.6 billion-year-old sun can produce superflares once every few thousand years. They said if the sun should produce a superflare, Earth would be bathed in a blast of high-energy radiation. This could disrupt various electronic devices around the world, cause widespread power blackouts, and take orbiting communication satellites out of commission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Here's a reminder to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com, and we'd like to hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, as always, to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, and our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the hard work of our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. My name's Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.